When You're Really Wanting More. Written by Susie Carter. Read by Silvercat 1620. Summary. Bruce might never have figured it out at all if it hadn't been for the sex curse. It's not actually a sex curse, but for Clark, it's pretty close. Author's notes. For the Clark Kent's Alien Biology Week 2021, prompt for day two. Excuse me, you need to eat. What? Yes, as it happens, my mind went straight into the gutter. I admit I fudged need a little. Please forgive me. And despite how the opening section may make things look, I promise Alien Biology gets in on the action. The dubcon is solely what's intrinsic to the scenario. Bruce is into it, but Clark's in no position to be aware of that, and Clark's under a compulsion that's rooted in pre-existing feelings, but Bruce isn't aware of that. Bruce might never have figured it out at all if it hadn't been for the sex curse. In the moment, he doesn't know that that's what it is. He's already on edge. A sorceress with some kind of grudge against Arthur has forced a magical island into being in the middle of the bay, and magic is never good news. The ground isn't ground so much as it is stone, massive tile blocks that rise from the sea in uneven tiers. The League agreed to split up, attack from multiple sides, and hope the sorceress can't hold them all off at once. And Bruce and Clark took the Metropolis side, with Barry speeding ahead to scout the lay of the land in front of them. Bruce told Clark to be careful, to not touch down anywhere unless he absolutely had to. But it doesn't matter. He floats gently over what looks like just another block, and glyphs suddenly blaze into being on the surface beneath him, brilliant red light like flame. He drops, abrupt as a stone. The impact of landing probably hasn't hurt him, but that doesn't mean the magic hasn't, and Bruce is the closest. He's already moving, even as he activates the League comm and bites out,
"S is down. I've got him."
And goddammit, Clark is hurt. He has to be. He's conscious, at least, lurching unsteadily to his feet even as Bruce crosses the last few yards to reach him. His eyes are hazy, unfocused, and there's something in the air around him, a strange, haloing glow the same color as the glyphs. Another moment and it finishes sinking its way beneath his skin. The glyphs go dull at the same instant, scorched and used up. Which can't possibly be good. "Bruce," he says thinly, hoarsely, grabbing at Bruce with clumsy hands. "Bruce." He's disoriented. There's no one in earshot. Bruce shut his comm off as soon as he was done with it, and Clark only activates his when he needs to say something to the team, because he's got no use for it the rest of the time when he can hear them without it. There's no point in trying to remind Clark to avoid names, nor in Bruce sticking to comm protocol himself. "Clark," Bruce says, and braces himself. And sure enough, a moment later, he's supporting the majority of Clark's body weight, Clark sagging into him with an odd, choked sound. "Clark, where are you hurt?" He'd been about to say, "Where are you hurt? What did you do? What did that do to you?" Except when he feels Clark's fingertips digging into the bat suit. Not convulsively, not in pain. With purpose. "Where are you going?" might be the better question, Bruce thinks distantly. It's not enough, obviously. The suit, the armor. All Bruce's nightmares about Superman cracking him open, peeling the shell of him apart and plucking his heart out for the hell of it, and Bruce still isn't prepared for Clark to tug the cowl off him, a single uncompromising motion. He still isn't prepared for the way it feels to have Clark's unsteady finger prizing apart four layers of bulletproof weave, shoving past the reinforcing plate between them, and finding a seam in the liquid armor vest beneath. Clark's trembling all over, not even exerting his full strength, and still, he's tearing right through all of it, straight to Bruce. Bruce shoves aside the first pointless gut reaction, the hot jolt jamming its way down his spine, and keeps supporting Clark with one hand, reaches with the other to cover one of Clark's. Clark's an inch away from the actual release for one side of the outer armor, designed to let Alfred remove it from Bruce in an emergency without any help from Bruce. And the more Bruce can reduce the damage Clark's mindlessly doing to the suit right now, the less repair work he'll have to do later. That's the only thing he's thinking. That's the only thing he's letting himself think. He wrestles the armor open along one side of his back, the cape loosening over the shoulder as the panel comes apart, and Clark jerks it forward, peels it off his shoulder, and frees his arm in a single movement and makes a strained, frantic, grateful little noise in the back of his throat. He's using his weight now, forcing Bruce to allow them both to sink in a half-controlled fall until Bruce is on his knees with Clark plastered to him, scrabbling at the undersuit, but it isn't. There must be a reason, a good one, something Bruce hasn't thought of yet. He's letting the subjective experience of Clark quite literally ripping his clothes off get the better of him, that's all. Clark rips the last layer out of his way and finds skin. A span that crosses Bruce's waist, the last handful of ribs. Nowhere particularly interesting, in other words, but Clark slides his hand over it, panting like he's been suffocating without it. Bruce still has a grip on his upper back, his shoulders, but it's not enough to keep him from moving. No. No. Clark, Bruce grits out, heart pounding. No, he can't possibly be trying to. Clark squirms down, finds that span of bare skin with his mouth instead, and Bruce had been doing his best to hold them both up, even after Clark managed to drag him to a kneel. But that's... He folds, sinking helplessly backward over his heels, legs abruptly weak. Clark shifts his hands out of his own way, pressing his face to Bruce's waist like that, and now he's settled them on Bruce's ass. Settled them. Christ, as if that's the word for the way Clark is digging his fingers in, the way the fabric is tearing under them. He is. He is trying to. More specifically, the magic, the curse is making him, which means Bruce needs to adjust his approach immediately. Helping Clark remove part of the suit was the right call. If Clark remembers this later, he won't remember Bruce fighting him off and failing, won't remember not caring and holding Bruce down anyway. And inexcusable as it might be under any other set of circumstances, as undeniable as the exposure of it is, it's for the best if Clark walks away from this with the understanding that Bruce liked it, wanted it. If only Bruce were doing this for Clark's sake. If only there were a single shred of actual altruism involved. If only it weren't true. But it's the best that he can do. And his best is only as much as Clark has ever deserved. So he lets it happen. He lets his weight drop backward, gets his legs out from under him, and Clark helps. Coaxes him hungrily into spreading himself out across the stone. He manages to retain the presence of mind to unhitch the utility belt, get it out of Clark's way so Clark doesn't just crush it one-handed and tear it apart. And after that, it's a matter of seconds. Clark blurring under his hands before he feels layers separate, seams part, a rush of air. And then, without any further preamble, his cock is in Clark's mouth. He'd been hard already. Of course he had. But only partially, thanks to the sheer discomfort inflicted by the cup inside the undersuit. The situation changes almost instantaneously, thanks to the fact that Clark has gripped him by the hips over what's left of the suit on one side and bare skin through ripped open armor on the other side, and has shoved Bruce's cock as far down his throat as it's possible for it to go. Bruce chokes on air, curling upward, clutching convulsively at Clark's head, fingers tangling in Clark's hair. It's the curse. He knows that. But the illusion of it is mercilessly compelling anyway. Clark, tossing sanity and reason and the mission itself aside, unwilling to wait another instant. Clark, unable to pause, to even ask, all his kindness and gentleness and caution, overwhelmed by sheer, visceral desperation. Clark, wanting him this much. The fundamental sequence of events past that point is unremarkable. It's a blowjob. Even if Bruce Wayne has never been sucked off with this particular combination of unpracticed clumsiness and fervent, scorching enthusiasm. Clark does all the work, actively lifting Bruce's hips, using Bruce's cock to fuck his own mouth. Bruce gasps and shudders and wrenches helplessly at Clark's hair, curls wrapped around his knuckles with what feels almost like an extension of Clark's mindless eagerness. He comes. He couldn't have held the moment off even if he'd wanted to. Clark swallows it. Everything. And Christ, it's the most obscene thing Bruce has ever felt. The muscles of Clark's throat working against the head of Bruce's cock. It's too much. His eyes screwing themselves involuntarily shut against the sensation, but he doesn't try to get away. He keeps them shut when Clark finally, finally draws away. The curse doesn't wear off immediately. Clark stays right where he is, breathing hard for no good reason, forehead resting against Bruce's naked hip, fingers still closed absently around the less than generous shape of Bruce's ass and the remains of the suit. But it must happen. Somewhere in that long, stretching span of quiet, Clark's breathing changes, a little at a time. Bruce can't begin to imagine what he must be thinking. And then he pushes himself up, gingerly jostling Bruce's thighs on the way, and clears his throat. Is it cruel to look at him? It might be. But crueler still, surely, to leave him alone in this. Bruce opens his eyes. Clark looks exactly the way he expected. Eyes huge in his red face, his throat working, his mouth wet and obscene and perfect. Though, of course, it won't stay like that for long. Clark can't bruise. The swelling is a temporary circulatory response to pressure and no more. Bruce, he says. Bruce, don't, Bruce says, as level and gentle as he can make it. It was a spell. Nothing you could have done. But later, Bruce says, and then stops. Clark looks grim, vaguely sick. We're going to need to talk about it. I know that. I'm not suggesting we don't. But right now, as if directed by a merciful hand, on cue, there's a sudden brilliant explosion of red light in the distance, somewhere on one of the higher tiers of the island. Clark's face clears. Sorceress, he agrees. Right. He clears his throat again. His face is still red. Do you need help with, Sure, Bruce says, deliberately mild, the barest degree of wry, acknowledging the sheer ludicrousness of their situation. And it works. Clark's mouth hitches into a half-nervous smile. Closing the distance again helps too, prevents a gulf from opening up, prevents Clark's hands against the armor from taking on undue weight or significance. Clark helps him reattach what can be reattached, and close what can be closed, and removes a dent in the shape of his own fingers from one piece of reinforcement plating. By the time Bruce is done double-checking the fit, Clark's got the cowl in his hands. He'd tossed it aside before, and as excruciating as it is to admit, Bruce hadn't given so much as an instant's thought to where it had landed. Bruce tugs it back on.
"Come on,"
he says, Batman's voice again, everything almost back to where it's supposed to be.
"We're late."
And he holds out his hands. Clark swallows, clasps his gauntlets, and lifts him into the air. After the sorceress is dealt with, the island sunk again, the day saved, and the League reassembled at the hall and debriefed, Bruce goes to see Victor, who doesn't seem surprised in the least, and in point of fact, has already pulled up his scans of the island's surface, the recorded imagery he captured on the largest set of monitors in the analysis lab. Yes, he can zoom in on the stone Clark flew across. Yes, the scorched outlines of the glyphs were still there afterward, recorded, even though Victor wasn't present to see the activities themselves. In the debriefing, it turned out there had been plenty more traps of the same kind on the other sides of the island, though if Diana, Arthur, Barry had been covering up anything close to what had happened to Clark, they'd managed to thoroughly fool Bruce.
"Cross-referenced against my database," Victor says, with a little help from Diana. "I've got a pretty good idea what they were supposed to do."
He touches the side of one monitor, a couple of conduits snaking their way out of the metal sockets off his wrist and merging with the screen, and the view on that monitor flickers and changes. A different angle, another part of the stone block island, and a set of glyphs that are almost the same as the trap that Clark. But not quite. Looking at them side by side, Bruce can see the similarities and a handful of differences. A few flourishes altered, one symbol replaced with another.
"This one," Victor adds, tapping the monitor, showing the second trap. "Caught Arthur. Inflicted thirst, so intense he forgot what he was doing. Turned around and jumped right off the edge and into the bay, and he was drinking it."
"It?" Bruce repeats. "The bay," Victor says. "He'd actually altered the water level by the time I got to him. Not a lot, but..."
Victor shrugs and taps his temple with his free hand, next to his eye, the red one.
"I could tell. Anyway, yeah, based on what I've got to work with, I'd say the one that got Clark would have been the same thing, but..."
Bruce tenses, fractional. He's been proceeding as though the rest of the team has no idea what's happened, because as far as he can tell, that appears to be the case. Diane could have heard them, Victor could have seen them, Barry could have run circles around them, and they'd never have noticed while it was happening. But Bruce is reasonably sure they were all preoccupied with Arthur or the sorceress or avoiding traps of their own, or all three. It won't matter, though, if Victor is about to translate this set of glyphs and tell him it says, right there, that Clark was struck with an insatiable hunger,
Victor says, magnified so much that he couldn't possibly have controlled it.
Bruce blinks. Victor glances at him, and then, specifically, at his shoulder. Bruce has long since changed out of the Batsuit, but Victor would have been more than able to detect the damage, even if Bruce had been able to disguise it perfectly.
"I assume that if he'd actually started gnawing on your arm, you wouldn't have an arm left."
"He didn't," Bruce says evenly. But he was definitely focused. So that tracks. And it does. Almost. Figuratively. Or literally, at least as long as the thing that Clark was hungry for was... Thanks, Bruce says, and Victor nods. Bruce turns away and leaves, in every visible respect showing no particular urgency. They all took basic bioscans when they returned to the hall, a straightforward precautionary measure in case there had been any lingering damage, any leftover magic still attempting to drain them or injure them. Bruce had only examined them long enough to determine that there were no signs of negative effects. He goes to his own workroom, as if intending to get an early start on the repairs to the suit, and pulls Clark's scan results up on the interface there. And Christ, he should have noticed right away. Easily the best readings Clark has ever registered, noticeably above his usual baseline, the peak of health, for someone who already was that compared to just about everyone else on the planet. Someone who'd gotten something he'd been missing, something he needed. Someone who'd had a fundamental biological requirement satisfied. And after those glyphs had lit up and dragged Clark down out of the sky, there had been only one thing Clark had consumed. One thing Clark had swallowed. He'd meant what he said to Clark afterward. They do need to talk about it, and Bruce does understand that. He'd never suggested they wouldn't, and avoiding that conversation won't actually spare Bruce much of anything, and will leave Clark stewing in his own distress. Not an equation that will ever work out in favor of keeping Clark waiting at arm's length. And Bruce now has a compelling, if unproven, hypothesis that weighs in favor of another course of action entirely. One with the side benefit of unambiguously alleviating any guilt Clark might still be feeling. Clark isn't difficult to find. When Bruce comes upstairs, he's waiting in the hall's main lounge. And he makes lounge seem like the wrong word for the room. He's sitting there in civilian clothes, glasses already on his nose, but so straight-backed, so utterly still except for the slow, absent ringing of his hands in his lap, that he makes Bruce want to stand up straighter to match. He looks up when Bruce comes in, face already pink. It gets pinker when Bruce closes the paired doors behind him. "Don't apologize again," Bruce warns him. Clark freezes with his mouth already half open, and then closes it again. With some input from Diana, Victor was able to analyze the glyphs that activated the spell. Bruce adds, level, neutral. He crosses the room and keeps his hands pointedly in his pockets, his sleeves still rolled halfway up, his elbows at a relaxed angle. This isn't a conversation Clark needs to dread. Clark's shoulders drop about half an inch. Apparently it was designed to make you hungry, Bruce says. He tries to keep it as bland as possible, not even a shadow of an undertone to suggest he could just as easily have said, cock hungry. It doesn't matter. Clark's shoulders go back up again, and the pink in his face is getting blotchy, spreading down to his throat. Victor was worried you might have tried to chew my arm off. Bruce tries. And that, at last, makes a meaningful difference. Clark snorts helplessly and then unbends, reaching up and covers his face with his hands. God, I wish, he says into his own palms, muffled. Bruce, I'm so... don't, Bruce reminds him, apologize. He pauses for a second. I'll admit, I was expecting him to translate that glyph into a very different word. But it's true, isn't it? And he strives to keep his voice level, the spirit of scientific inquiry, when he says, I came and you swallowed. You ate it. You eat food, but that's because you like to do it, not because there's anything in it that you need, but just say it. It won't get any easier if you keep dancing around it. Just say it. Ejaculate contains something important, something that actually alters the way your body processes energy. Clark's hands have dropped. He's staring at Bruce, eyes wide, all that pretty color in his face starting to fade. What? He says slowly, and then, no. And then he stops, presses his lips into a line, and shakes his head. I mean, yes, he admits. Apparently it does. I feel different. I guess it showed up on the bioscan? Bruce nods. I checked with the ship on the way back, Clark admits, rubbing at the back of his neck. And for Superman, Bruce allows, there had probably been enough time for it. It's kind of a mineral supplement thing. That was probably why I was licking, too. The sense memory of it. Clark baring that span of skin and then setting his mouth to it, the flat of his tongue, is briefly intense. That makes sense, Bruce manages. Sodium, enzymes. That's why I did what I was doing once it started working, Clark interrupts. But that's just because it tasted good, Bruce. It wasn't hunger. Bruce falls silent. It's like sunlight, Clark says, into the sudden stillness between them. I like it. It makes me feel like I can do anything. And that brings a fresh hint of pink back into the apples of his cheeks. But I'm not hungry for it. I don't feel physical hunger. Not like that. That's not how my body works. It wasn't about sodium, and it wasn't about enzymes. Clark stops, his throat working, and wets his lips. And Bruce gasps suddenly what it costs him to open his mouth again and say, Bruce, it was you. And of all the things about this utterly bizarre situation that Bruce has managed to make sense out of, that isn't one. It was you, Clark repeats. That curse couldn't make me hungry. Not for real. It came as close as it could get, that's all. It figured out the deepest kind of lack that it could make me feel. And that was you. That I didn't have. That I couldn't. He cuts himself off. He doesn't look like he's standing in front of a firing squad anymore. He's just sitting there, elbows resting on his thighs now, looking up at Bruce from behind his glasses. Unashamed, gently resigned, knowing exactly what he's saying, and saying it anyway. Bruce remembers the ache of it. The visceral, almost physical intensity of it. What he'd perceived as illusion, how helplessly frantic he'd been to take in as much of it as he could before it was inevitably dispelled. Clark wanting him that much. It hadn't been hunger. Not the specific physical awareness of the stomach, its demands, so obviously a different category of sensation to a body that was capable of both. But Bruce can't claim that he hadn't felt in that moment as if he were starving, as if he were going to, as soon as it was taken away from him again. He wets his lips, keeps his unsteady hands very carefully inside his pockets.
"I was going to make you an offer," he admits quietly. Clark blinks. Whatever he was expecting Bruce to say, that wasn't it.
"An offer?" he echoes uncertainly.
"A steady supply," Bruce elaborates after a moment. "If you were willing to consider it. If you didn't have any alternate sources in mind already."
He'd had it all figured out. He'd have been calm, reasonable. Clark probably would have said no, too embarrassed to take him up on it. But as long as he'd made sure Clark understood that the offer would remain open, sooner or later, maybe. Mutual enjoyment and a tangible benefit, at least as long as Clark was interested. And Bruce? Bruce would have been able to keep himself fed for a little while. "Alternate," Clark says, and then his face changes. And Christ, Bruce can't look at him. Can't look away, either. "There isn't anybody else," he says, soft and serious. "There couldn't be." He stands up, which is lucky, because Bruce can't figure out how to move, how to so much as take his goddamn hands out of his pockets. Clark reaches for him anyway, takes him by the elbows and draws him in, and Bruce sucks in a breath, lets his eyes fall shut, lets it happen. It isn't like before. Clark's mouth is soft, slow, still clumsy, a little, but only with nerves, not that mindless, driving need. But it doesn't matter. Bruce is about 2 seconds from dropping to his knees again anyway. Clark breaks away after a minute, but he doesn't go far, lips brushing Bruce's cheek, and the shape of his mouth is changing. He's smiling. "A steady supply? Jesus, Bruce. An exclusive contract, Mr. Kent," Bruce corrects unsteadily. And Clark leans away just far enough to grin at him. Bright, brilliant, reaching up to skim a fingertip along the line of his jaw.
"I think that can be arranged, Mr. Wayne," he murmurs.
The end.